is a prerequisite to making black holes. Stars also, as we have seen, are the precursors to the development of interesting chemistry and hence life. So Smolin suggests that there has been a Darwinian natural selection of universes in the multiverse, directly favouring the evolution of black hole fecundity and indirectly favouring the production of life. Not all physicists are enthusiastic about Smolin's idea, although the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Murray Gell-Mann is quoted as saying,
"Smolin? Is he that young guy with those crazy ideas? He may not be wrong."
A mischievous biologist might wonder whether some other physicists are in need of Darwinian consciousness raising. It is tempting to think, and many have succumbed, that to postulate a plethora of universes is a profligate luxury which should not be allowed. If we are going to permit the extravagance of a multiverse, so the argument runs, we might as well be hung for a sheep as a lamb and allow a god. Aren't they both equally unparsimonious ad hoc hypotheses and equally unsatisfactory? People who think that have not had their consciousness raised by natural selection. The key difference between the genuinely extravagant god hypothesis and the apparently extravagant multiverse hypothesis is one of statistical improbability. The multiverse, for all that it is extravagant, is simple. God, or any intelligent, decision-taking, calculating agent, would have to be highly improbable in the very same statistical sense as the entities he is supposed to explain. The multiverse may seem extravagant in sheer number of universes, but if each one of those universes is simple in its fundamental laws, we are still not postulating anything highly improbable. The very opposite has to be said of any kind of intelligence.
Some physicists are known to be religious. Russell Stannard and the Reverend John Polkinghorne are the two British examples I've mentioned. Predictably, they seize upon the improbability of the physical constants all being tuned in their more or less narrow Goldilocks zones and suggest that there must be a cosmic intelligence who deliberately did the tuning. I have already dismissed all such suggestions as raising bigger problems than they solve. But what attempts have theists made to reply? How do they cope with the argument that any god capable of designing a universe, carefully and foresightfully tuned to lead to our evolution, must be a supremely complex and improbable entity who needs an even bigger explanation than the one he's supposed to provide? The theologian Richard Swinburne, as we have learned to expect, thinks he has an answer to this problem, and he expounds it in his book, Is There a God? He begins by showing that his heart is in the right place by convincingly demonstrating why we should always prefer the simplest hypothesis that fits the facts. Science explains complex things in terms of the interactions of simpler things, ultimately the interactions of fundamental particles. I, and I dare say you, think it a beautifully simple idea that all things are made of fundamental particles which, although exceedingly numerous, are drawn from a small, finite set of types of particle. If we are sceptical, it is likely to be because we think the idea too simple. But for Swinburne, it is not simple at all, quite the reverse. Given that the number of particles of any one type, say electrons, is large, Swinburne thinks it too much of a coincidence that so many should have the same properties. One electron he could stomach, but billions and billions of electrons, all with the same properties, that is what really excites his incredulity. For him, it would be simpler, more natural, less demanding of explanation if all electrons were different from each other. Worse, no one electron should naturally retain its properties for more than an instant at a time. Each should change capriciously, haphazardly, and fleetingly from moment to moment. That is Swinburne's view of the simple native state of affairs. Anything more uniform, what you or I would call more simple, requires a special explanation.
It is only because electrons and bits of copper and all other material objects have the same powers in the 20th century as they did in the 19th century that things are as they are now.
Enter God. God comes to the rescue by deliberately and continuously sustaining the properties of all those billions of electrons and bits of copper and neutralizing their otherwise ingrained inclination to wild and erratic fluctuation.
That is why, when you've seen one electron, you've seen them all. That is why bits of copper all behave like bits of copper. And that is why each electron and each bit of copper stays the same as itself from microsecond to microsecond and from century to century. It is because God constantly keeps a finger on each and every particle, curbing its reckless excesses and whipping it into line with its colleagues to keep them all the same.